Hi, we are
Sam,
Katie,
and Michaela from Castleton, and you are listening to
WGXC Acra
on 90.7 FM. Keep on smiling.
You're listening to the three extra web streams available at wavefarm.org/listen or WGXC.org, any WGXC.org page. Click on the Listen button to hear Quintron's Weather Warlock, Zach Poff's Pond Station, or the test site of Acoustic Commons. Live weather you can hear on your radio anytime you want at WGXC.org or wavefarm.org/listen. Hear the hydrophones in the Wave Farm Pond in Zach Poff's Pond Station, microphone outside in the woods at Wave Farm in the test site of Acoustic Commons, and hear a live stream of an analog drone synthesizer playing the weather, the changes in precipitation, the changes in sunlight, the changes in wind, and the changes in temperature. At wavefarm.org/listen, you can hear Quintron's Weather Warlock, Zach Poff's Pond Station, and the test site of Acoustic Commons. On any WGXC.org page, click on the Listen button to tune in your weather.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Fridman Gallery in New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Now it's time for the WGXC local news from the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org. I'm Tom Rowe in Acra. Sarah Trafton is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Greene County officials are debating the future of the former county jail site on Bridge Street in Catskill. The historic jail building was listed on state and national historic registries before the county demolished the building in November. At a recent meeting, County Administrator Sean Grodin presented a rendering of a two-story building designed to house secure parking for the Office of Court Administration on the lower level and office space for the Public Defender's Office on the second. The building would measure 14,000 square feet and have 23 parking spaces for court personnel. A pedestrian bridge would connect the building to the courthouse. The county paid more than $70,000 to salvage approximately 3,500 square feet of the Ohio sandstone facade from the old buildings and is looking to reuse the materials. Quote, "I think it looks really, really nice," unquote, Caro Representative Harry Lennon said. Quote, "It fits in perfectly," unquote, Catskill Representative Matthew Lavera said. Quote, "I think it quells the rumors of leaving it as a parking lot and doing nothing. It shows that we have some foresight into the future," unquote. The new space would be ideal for the Public Defender's Office, Grodin said, adding that the staff has doubled or possibly tripled within the last year. Grodin did not release cost estimates for the building construction, but noted the timing was financially favorable. In 2022, the county will see the retirement of approximately $2 million in debt, and if certain conditions are met, the development would not result in a budget increase, he predicted. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Patricia Doxey is reporting for the Daily Freeman that preliminary 2020 U.S. Census data suggests the population in Ulster County declined by roughly 3.2% during the past decade, down to just under 177,000 from more than 182,000 residents at the time of the 2010 census, according to Robert Leibowitz, principal planner for the county planning department. That means that when the new district lines are drawn, there will be fewer people in each legislative district than there are today. The members of the county's Commission on Reapportionment were given an overview last week during the group's first meeting of the process they will use to create 23 new legislative districts to reflect the shift in the county's population. Ulster County Planning Commissioner Dennis Doyle said that while the overall population has declined, commission members will have to look at where those population shifts occurred as they work to redraw new district lines. Doyle also said changes in state law that no longer require counties to consider prison populations when drawing district lines could also result in significant shifts of district boundaries. The seven-member Commission on Reapportionment is charged with using 2020 U.S. Census data to redraw the county's legislative district lines, and it must adopt a new redistricting plan no later than July 20th, 2022. The new lines are to be in place for the November 2023 election of county legislators. The final census data the commission will use to redraw the district lines will not be available until the end of July. In the meantime, commission members will meet via Zoom on the second Wednesday of the month until then. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Bill Williams is reporting for Columbia Green Media that a portion of Route 32 in Cairo was closed the afternoon of January 29th following a collision between a Cairo-Durham Central School District school bus and a car. Two students were on the bus at the time of the accident. Neither was injured, said Cairo-Durham Superintendent Michael Weatherby. It is unclear if any occupants of the car were injured. Shortly before 2 p.m., Green County 911 sent Cairo Fire Department, Cairo Ambulance, and Greene County Paramedics to 7413 Route 32. The bus received damage to a passenger door. The airbags in the vehicle deployed in the crash. The car sustained front-end damage from the impact, and it was eventually towed from the scene. Traffic on Route 32 was limited to one lane of alternating traffic and then completely closed when the vehicles were being removed. Route 32 was reopened to traffic, and all companies were back in service at 2:53 p.m., State police investigated the accident with the assistance of the town of Cairo police. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Sunday will be sunny, but very cold with a high of just 23 degrees. Then Sunday night, chance of snow begins after 2 a.m., a 30% chance. And then more snow is likely on Monday and into Tuesday. In fact, the National Weather Service has issued a winter storm watch from Monday at 7 a.m. until Tuesday at 1 p.m. as many inches of snow are expected. The more the south and east you go, and if the storm tilts north and west, there could be even more snow locally. Tuesday, the snow continues, and then it becomes cloudy with a high of just 28. A low around 21 Tuesday night. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
Hi, Laura Kuhn here, director of the John Cage Trust, bringing you a deep dive into the intriguing life and work of Renaissance man John Cage, celebrated composer, poet, philosopher, chess pupil of Marcel Duchamp, life partner of Merce Cunningham, macrobiotic chef, exponent of Zen, visual artist, and avid and pioneering mycologist. Tune in to All Things Cage, 7 p.m. Saturdays beginning January 2nd, for conversations with cage experts and enthusiasts from around the world, right here at Wave Farm's WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, and via the web at wavefarm.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Elizabeth Cortell of Woodland Hills, California. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes? Tomorrow? I'll take a look at swine flu, up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
Oh, in Georgia. Oh.
I'm Lena. Hello.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Bookish things.
Yeah, books we love, and like Georgia said, bookish things.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we're often joined by our friends Amelia, Mashuda, Fatia, Jada, and other fine friends. But it looks like it might just be the three of us today. So we're going to talk about some books.
The majority of the class, I haven't seen a lot. I haven't seen them, met the majority of the...
Oh, of the co-hosts? Yeah, some of them have had trouble coming in recent weeks. But yeah, so today we're going to talk about some books or bookish things. And I know that Georgia has a book to talk about because she showed it to us before we got on the radio. So maybe we can start with Georgia.
Yes. So my book is Secrets and Scones. It is by Laurel Remington, and it's really good. It's about a girl who named Scarlett who is really embarrassed by her mom's famous vlog where it talks about embarrassing stuff about her, like her underwear.
That's fair. I would be pretty embarrassed by my mom's vlog if she talked about my underwear too.
Yeah, I would too. And so she finds a kitchen next door when a neighbor is out because she had to go to the hospital. She decides to make some scones and starts there. The back, maybe. Okay. Scarlett is sick of being a star and victim of her mom's famous blog. Her solution? Become completely boring and deprive her mom of embarrassing material. The only problem is being boring as well. Boring. So when Scarlett finds a gorgeous kitchen in the house next door left empty by an elderly neighbor during a hospital stay, it's too tempting to resist checking it out. Before she really knows what she's doing, Scarlett is whipping up a batch of scones and making an unexpected friend. But can they keep their baking a secret? And can Scarlett find the secret ingredients to cake, family, and friendship? That's it.
That sounds fun. Sounds like the main character needs to set some boundaries with her mother about what she can share online.
Well, I'm gonna try not to spoil. I usually do a bad job of not spoiling, so I'm going to mute myself before I get the entire story away.
Oh dear. Did the book inspire you to bake anything in particular? Because I know you're a baker.
Well, a few years ago I tried reading it, but I found it really boring because, yes, I do love to bake. I'm celiac, so I can't eat a single grain of gluten, even the tiniest bit. My body is like confirmed allergic. I get really bad stomach aches, or I'm sick if I eat gluten. So I am a celiac-friendly baker, and my dream bakery is going to be Mintley. And after I finished reading the book, I finished reading it last night. I started it during my little sister's nap, and then I was just glued to it. I could not let myself get out of it. So I was like this all day. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Hi, sister.
Nose in your book.
Cat. Okay, I'm done. Okay. That's why it's like last night. And as I told Emily and Lena before, well, on air. Oh, yeah. Last night I made a cake. I used cake mix, but I went all out on decorations. I'm a cake decorator, girl. I tried a new thing that I wanted to try for a while where I shade the frosty across the cake. It came out really beautifully. I'm really excited. Okay, now I'm going to cut myself off before I cut into everybody else's time.
I have a question. Since you're a baker and since you love graphic novels, have you ever read Bake Sale by Sarah Varon?
I don't think so.
It's really cute. You might like it. It's a graphic novel about a cupcake named Cupcake, whose best friend is Eggplant. And Cupcake has a bakery and a band they're in. And yeah, it's just it's a really cute story. It's funny.
Check it out.
Yeah, it made me want to bake. Although, fun fact, I don't like eggplant. I don't think that's that fun, actually. It's not really a fun fact. It's just a fact. So the eggplant did not make me want to eat eggplant. In fact, I even more don't want to eat eggplant because now I've seen an eggplant with a face. And that's just cruel. But I'll still eat cupcakes.
I mean, if you saw a pig with the face versus an eggplant with the face, why would it go in the opposite direction for the eggplant? Okay.
Well, I don't need an excuse to not eat eggplant because I don't like to. So
true. And yeah. Adults get to choose. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's true. One of the perks.
I can't wait.
Alina, do you have a book or bookish thing you wanted to talk about?
So I'm going to be talking about something that I've been assigned for school, which is writing. And I'm pretty sure I'm allowed to talk about writing on the show. And it's about school uniforms, like should students wear school uniforms? And I choose that students should not wear school uniforms. I'd like to know if you guys would like students to wear school uniforms or to not wear school uniforms.
I guess I would prefer not to. I'm not in school anymore, but so the stakes are pretty low.
Usually I would jump right to no, they should not have to. Like, kind of depends. If you're talking about kids who brag a lot, are like, oh, look at my clothes, and it's a school just with them, they should have to wear uniforms. I think kids should not have to wear uniforms, but if they're a group of people at school who are raggy about their clothes, I think instead of punishing everybody, I think dress code or uniform, the ones that are all braggy, and let the other people not. Well, actually, in general, I don't know. I think they should not, because if you did do that, it'd be kind of like singling out. Okay, it's Leah's turn, so.
Well,
but my final answer is no.
Well, I thought that was like a good, like, I'm pretty sure analysis is the word. I don't really know what the word is. But the reason why I chose no is one, because public schools are famous for them, for kids not having to wear school uniforms, because I go to a public school. Two, like, I don't think we have an elementary school and like pre-Kers and kindergartners go there, and I don't think they would like to wear it, like stuff like that. Four, everyone has their own clothing style. Yeah, they're going to be like that 1% of kids who actually wear skirts and stuff like that. But like everyone else in my school, I'm pretty sure a majority of us would rather wear, if we did have to have school uniforms, I'm pretty sure a majority of us would at least try to wear like pants or something like that. Because I'm pretty sure, because it's winter, like, and it gets really cold where we are, like, I'm pretty sure a majority of schools that make you wear uniforms, like, they don't let you wear stockings or, like, pants under your skirts unless it's, like, I don't know, 30 degrees or under. And they make us go outside when it's, like, super cold. So, yeah, those are my top four, I don't know, reasons why we probably shouldn't have school uniforms. But we have to choose some stuff from like this site called procon.org. Mm-hmm. Also, fun fact, my brother used that same site when he was doing it when he was a child. Another fun fact, he was born before the late 2000s, which are like 2010s and over. Like, so he was born in the early 2000s.
Fun.
Fun.
Yeah, I think also, I mean, I think I lean towards, you know, clothing and dress is a way of young people expressing themselves. And so I wouldn't want to stifle that as long as they're doing it appropriately. You know, I think dress code should be as open as possible, you know, maybe not allowing for things that are hate speech or something like that to be on clothes. But yeah, I think as few restrictions as possible. I also think young people are dealing with a lot in life, and clothing, in addition to being style, is also comfort. And like you were talking about with, you know, how warm or cold you are. And so I don't know that uniforms are that well known for their comfort. And I think we shouldn't do anything to make young people more uncomfortable in school and in life. So
yeah,
that's why I vote no. Let people wear what they want for the most part.
Another reason that I put on there. Okay, so school uniforms are gendered, as majority of us know. And some students who are transgender, gender fluid, and or gender nonconforming will feel like outsiders. And this was actually on the website, and it said that, like, a boy who is transgender had to wear a skirt and a blouse, and he felt uncomfortable being in a skirt and a blouse. So, yeah.
Yeah, that is understandable. It's a good point.
Yeah.
So you have to write an essay on this topic? Is that what you're doing for school?
Yeah, basically. Also, it's due tomorrow. I'm at least happy that they gave us 2 days on it.
And are all of your classmates doing the same topic, or did you each pick a topic separately?
Oh, we all have to do the same topic, but I will be very excited for if we get to do, like, freestyle writing or stuff like that, because I like that kind of stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's fun. That's a fun assignment, getting to, like, take a position on something and really think about it.
Yeah.
I like it. If you do any more, you should ask us.
Yeah.
And share your opinion.
Yeah, I will.
Cool. Thanks for sharing.
You're welcome.
So today I wanted to just briefly mention the American Library Association announced their Youth Media Awards this week, which are their major annual awards for books written for young people. And so I thought I would just share some of those winners with you all. So one of their biggest awards is the John Newbery Medal for the most outstanding contribution to children's literature. And this year, the winner of that was When You Trap a Tiger, which is written by Tay Keller. And it looks really good. I'll read the description for that because I haven't read this one before. When Lily and her family move in with her sick grandmother, a magical tiger straight out of her Halmoni's Korean folktales arrives, prompting Lily to unravel a secret family history. Oh, by the way, Halmoni means grandmother. Long, long ago, Halmoni stole something from the tigers. Now the tigers want it back. And when one of those tigers offers Lily a deal, return what Halmoni stole in exchange for Halmoni's health, Lily is tempted to accept. But deals with tigers are never what they seem. With the help of her sister and her new friend Ricky, Lily must find her voice and the courage to face a tiger. It has a really pretty cover, too. It was not awarded for its pretty cover design, but it could have been. So that was the medal winner. They also had 5 honor books. All 13, The Incredible Cave Rescue of the Thai Boys Soccer Team, written by Christina Sunternvat. Box, Henry Brown Mails Himself to Freedom, written by Carol Boston Weatherford and illustrated by Michelle Wood. Fighting Words, written by Kimberly Brubaker Bradley. And We Dream of Space, written by Aaron Entrada Kelly, illustrated also by Aaron Entrada Kelly and Celia Krampian. And A Wish in the Dark, written by Christina Sunternvat. Which is interesting because she won the award twice, the honor twice. She was honored for 2 books. So I guess she's an author to keep an eye on. Another one of their major awards is the Randolph Caldecott Medal for the most distinguished American picture book for children. And the winner for that was We Are Water Protectors. And then there are 4 honor books, A Place Inside of Me, A Poem to Heal the Heart, written by Zeta Elliott and illustrated by Noah Denman. The Catman of Aleppo, which I actually have at home right now. I'm getting ready to read that one, which was written by Irene Latham and Karim Shamsi Basha, illustrated by Yuko Shimizu, and Me and Mama, illustrated and written by Cosby A. Cabrera, and Outside In, which I also just got from the library, written by Deborah Underwood and illustrated by Cindy Derby. And then the one other one I'm going to share, there's actually a lot of different awards that they give out for audiobooks, books written for adults that would appeal to young audiences. There's the Coretta Scott King Awards, the Schneider Family Book Awards, the Odyssey Awards. There's so many. And but the other one I'm going to share is the Michael L. Prince Award for Excellence in Literature Written for Young Adults. So this one's like a little bit older than the other two categories. And the winner of that is Everything Sad is Untrue, A True Story by Daniel Nayeri. And I'll read the description for that one, because that one I also have not read, but it looks really good. Definitely on my my reading list. And here's the description. At the front of a middle school classroom in Oklahoma, a boy named Khosrew, whom everyone calls Daniel, stands, trying to tell a story. His story. But no one believes a word he says. To them, he is a dark-skinned, hairy-armed boy with a big butt whose lunch smells funny, who makes things up and talks about poop too much. But Khosrew's story, stretching back years and decades and centuries, are beautiful and terrifying. From the moment his family fled Iran in the middle of the night with the secret police moments behind them, back to the sad cement refugee camps of Italy, and further back to the fields near the river Aras, where rain-soaked flowers bled red like the yolk of sunset burst over everything. And further back still to the jasmine-scented city of Isfahan, we bounce between a school bus of kids armed with paperclip missiles and spitballs to the heroines and heroes of Khosrew's family past, who ate pastries that made people weep and cry, Ach Tamar, and touched carpets woven with precious gems. Like Sherazade in a hostile classroom, Daniel weaves a tale to save his own life, to stake his claim to the truth. And it is a true story. It is Daniel's. That sounds very good. Excited to read that. My to-read list keeps growing and growing. It's never ending. But in good news, the Four Prince honor books I have all read, so I'm ahead on the honor books. So Apple Skin to the Core by Eric Yansworth was one. Oh no, there's one on here I haven't read. Dragon Hoops by Jean Luen Yang, which has been on my reading list for quite some time. It's a graphic novel. Everybody Looking by Candace Ilo, and We Are Not Free by Tracy Chi. I know I've talked about the few that I've read on the show before. They were all very good. And so, yeah, if you're interested in seeing what librarians across the country, the committees that put together this award, decided were some of the best books of the year in various categories, you can find that online if you look up ALA, for American Library Association, Youth Media Awards. You can get the full list there. But what happens every year is this list comes out, and usually there's ones that I've already read, but there's a lot that I haven't read, and my to-read list just gets bigger and bigger.
I have a suggestion on how to cross the books off. So what you might try to do is try to find some free time and maybe read then. I usually do all my reading before my bedtime. Mm-hmm. Maybe you would do that. Maybe you'd read like as many chapters as you can before bed. And if you did that every single night, you'd probably get so many books crossed off of there.
That's a good idea. I often read at night, but I don't always read at night. So I think if I made it an every night kind of thing.
Yeah, and maybe you should set a goal for yourself, like 5 chapters per night.
Yeah.
Then that would get you.
I also have a number of books that have been on my to-read list for many years. And I've thought about just making a special list for those. And it's like my goal to read them all this year. So just, I mean, it's.
Those can maybe be your New Year's resolutions.
Yeah, that's how I was kind of thinking of them. You know, it wouldn't be every single book that's been on my to-read list for many years because I don't have time for that. But I can pick a handful of them.
Is your list mental or actual physical?
I would say it's both. I have, I use Goodreads to keep track of my reading. And I also have a to-read list on there. But then there's also just books that I know in my mind that I've wanted to read for a really long time. Like whenever they come up, I'm like, oh yeah, I want to read that.
I think what you might want to do is instead of just multiplying it to so many books that you can't handle, you might want to try to pause adding books to the to-read list for a while until you kind of cross off, I don't know, like third half of them. And then you can start gradually adding books back.
Or maybe I can make a separate list that's a top tier.
Okay. Your choice.
I don't mind having a really long to read list. At least I'll never run out of anything.
True. Even if gene that makes you live for 2,000 years, actually, you probably still would have more books.
As long as I'm happily reading, I don't mind living for 2,000 years.
I wish I could live for 2,000 years. Though it is hard to outlive people. Though you might just want to make sure the other people do it too, so you guys can all live. Imagine how much would have changed in 2,000 years.
So here's a question. Do you think in 2,000 years humans will still inhabit planet Earth? And if they do you think they'll still be reading print books?
Doubt it.
2,000 years is a long time.
It is.
Yeah, think. 2,000 years ago was 0000000.
But if humans do still inhabit planet Earth or have moved on to some other planet, although I think we're just going to be here or not be here, but I wonder if they did have print books, I wonder what they would be writing about in 2,000 years.
Yeah. Well, like, if what you would... think about it, didn't they have print books in 000?
I forget when print books were. I'm going to look that up.
Well, they had books they could write in books, but they couldn't print them out, of course. Print books came later, a lot later.
The 15th century books, the books in codex form and printed on paper as we know it today, dates from the 15th century.
Hmm. So probably 2,000 years from now, there would be no such thing as books. Maybe 2,000 years from now, you could meet every celebrity there is. I want to meet the Kids Bop kids.
They're going to be 2,000 years old.
But they would get the thing too, so we could all be at the same age, not be too old. I could meet Alana. Ah! I could meet Alana. Sorry, I'm a big fan.
That's fine.
They're number one fan. I check their website every day. I sent them fan mail a month and 22 days ago.
Do you have a favorite song that they perform?
I don't really know. There are too many to pick from. Days to their new albums are released. I was counting down the days till Kids Bop 2021 was released. I check YouTube Kids a lot, see their new videos.
And they just do cover songs, right?
Yeah, but sometimes they do originals every few hours. Oh, okay. Sprinkle an original for a little.
Do you listen to both the Kids Bop version and the original version, or do you just listen to the Kids Bop version? Like, do you ever listen
to
both?
Just the Kids Bop version. Really, the people that I listen to are just pretty much Taylor Swift, Kids Bop. Usually the original ones are really, really explicit. Too explicit to explain, so I just stick with
it. So that's why you like the Kids Bop, because it kind of makes it a little more comfortable?
Partly. Also, I'm obsessed with them. I know every single thing about them. My favorite Kids Bop is Alana. If any Kids Bop kids are listening to this, no offense, other Kids Bop kids, I like you just as much, but they probably won't be listening to this. It would be cool if they were, though.
It would.
That'd be pretty awesome.
That'd be pretty neat. Mm-hmm. Lena, do you have any favorite music?
The music that I listen to the most is probably lo-fi beats, which is basically music, like calming music. It depends on which one, but it has no words. So, like, yeah. It
makes good background music.
Yeah, it's
for when
good
you're
for
doing your art.
Study. Mm-hmm. Oh, I use it when I'm studying because my teachers give me mountains of homework and they don't give me a break. If you are listening to this, Miss K and Miss C, may you please stop giving us work?
Give her a break.
Give us all a break. Give us a month-long break because, like, I can't keep up with this. I have a career as a YouTuber.
You? Cool.
Yeah, I actually do. Yeah, I do have a career as a YouTuber.
That's cool. So cool.
Thank you, Georgia.
Yay.
Okay.
Well, we're just about out of time for today, but thank you everyone for listening. We'll be back next week with some more books and bookish things to talk about. Okay, until then.
Bookish things.
Yeah, we like talking about bookish things and just saying bookish things.
bookish things. It's so fun to say.
But until then, we hope everyone has a great week with lots of quality reading time. Happy reading.
Have an amazing week. Have fun and keep keeping on.
School bell rings, walk me home. Sidewalk chalk covered in snow. Lost my gloves, you give me one. Wanna hang out, yeah, sounds like fun. Video games, you pass me a note. Sleeping in tents, it's nice to have a friend. It's nice to have a friend. Light pink sky up on the roof. Sun sinks down, no curfew. 20 questions would tell the truth. You've been stressed out lately, yeah, me too. Something gave you the nerve to touch my hand. It's nice to have a friend. It's nice to have a friend.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Movies on the Radio airs the second Thursday evening of each month at 7 p.m., We'll be back on February 11th with Catskill-based filmmaker and radio producer Richard Sandler to screen and listen in on his film and video work. Meantime, check us out online at filmontmediaproject.org, that's Filmont with an F, or find the Filmont Media Project on Facebook or Instagram to stay updated.
Now we have Hudson Common Council President Tom DiPietro on the line to tell us what's going on with the Common Council. Is there a meeting next week, Tom?
No, it's not next week. As the informal meeting is every second Monday, and then the formal meeting is the third Tuesday. But we have a full-packed agenda for what's coming up because, you know, a little bit of a slow start to January because of an altering of how we do things, but we're going to come out strong, and we have a lot of things on the agenda, and there's a lot of things happening in the city in general right now. I mean, it's amazing that during a pandemic, things are moving ahead, and it's an exciting time.
So tell us first about the changes with the council. I guess the major change is that there are no committees any longer, and
Well, that's sort of it. People say there's no more committees, but actually there's no more standing committees. That meaning there aren't the regular monthly meetings of the various committee categories. Instead, what we're initiating is a sequence of ad hoc committees, which means every time we have a new agenda item, members of the council will agree, you know, or volunteer to serve on specific committees. For example, some of the things we're dealing with immediately in the future are a project about how to deal with the sidewalk issue in Hudson. We also want to sell a lot of real estate. We also want to look into developing a solar farm. So you take each of those topics and then either assign or people volunteer from the council, and we'll have open meetings about each of those topics. So, you know, I call them, well, what they are is ad hoc committees. So, and these committees will follow the same format as the previous standing committees. So there'll be plenty of public discussion. There's no change in that. What the big change is, all of the most committees were really just reports from various departments. So instead of dividing that up across the month, we're going to concentrate it into the informal meeting. Now, I was thinking about it last night. We may need two informal meetings as we go forward, because there are upwards of five reports: the fire, police, Department of Public Works, the youth department, and the treasurer. Some of those are incredibly brief, like the fire department. They just kind of tell us what they've done for the past month or two. And others can get pretty elaborate. Now, the idea of that is, now by having an informal meeting, the entire council will be there, as well as a much larger part of the public. So it doesn't really, you know, decrease the work or decrease the amount of public time. It just concentrates it, maybe streamlines it a little bit, makes it more efficient.
So let's take your fire committee example as an example.
Uh-huh.
So in the past, the fire committee would meet before the common council meets and...
on a different day, yeah.
On a different day, and talk about whatever it would report to the committee, and the public would be there and would be able to... the public would be there in person, I guess, if you're having in-person meetings, but if not, it would be virtual. And ask about whatever's going on. So now that is going to happen at the Common Council meeting?
Right, at the informal Common Council meetings.
So the informal Common Council meetings are going to get longer, and the fire committee meetings are going to be non-existent because they're going to be in the informal council meeting.
That's it. And we may end up needing two informal meetings, which I have no problem with. But you know, the idea of Zoom has kind of this is largely a response to the pandemic, because the Zoom meetings online, I had to organize them all and basically host them all, and I started realizing that they were just kind of languishing, the various committee meetings. You know, a couple people would show up. The fire committee would be real quick, because there's not a lot of questions. You know, they give a report, maybe tell us about something they're going to need in the future. And it's important that the entire council know about all these other committees. That's the thing that I noticed the most, that both the public and the entire council did not realize all these other committee meetings were just as important as the main committee meetings.
And so it won't mean...
The main council meetings.
It won't mean... The council people are working less. They're just going to be working different hours. Instead of going to the committee meeting, they'll be having that committee meeting during one or two common council meetings.
Right. But then with the ad hoc committees, they'll actually be working harder, because once you have a committee dedicated to a single agenda item, they're going to have to do it or else be held accountable. So if we say, okay, we have a sidewalk project committee right now, we're going to schedule a meeting, and they're going to have to start actually coming up with the final proposal for how we deal with our long our sidewalk issue, which has been, you know, long in the making. We have very uneven infrastructure in our city sidewalks. Some are an abomination; others are well kept up by the owner. As you may know, the owner of the building in front of the sidewalk is responsible for maintaining that sidewalk. So, you know, the vast disparity. And a number of council members have worked on how to fix that. And by the way, Tom, a little side point. I've seen people accusing me of, like, some weird power grab by this change in committees. Well, there's two things to say to that. One, it wasn't my idea. It's an idea that came up from two council members, and they had to convince me that it was a good idea. Secondly, there's no power really change here. I mean, there's going to be just as much public commentary, just as much contribution from actual council members. So it's really not a substantive difference. It's really just a matter of format. And more importantly, if it doesn't work, we can go back to the old way. There's nothing set in stone. There is one thing set in stone. Our charter requires the formal meeting every third Tuesday. That's in the charter. Nothing else about committees is really in the charter.
And the informal meetings aren't in the charter either?
No, they're not.
So you don't have to do anything to the charter to have two informal meetings a month?
Correct.
And do you have you decided definitely there's going to be two informal meetings? And if so,
no.
When?
I just said that. I was just thinking that last night because that's breaking news, Tom. Because I realized these meetings, we're going to test it in a week and a half. And if they just go on way too long, then we might have to break it into two. And that won't be a bad thing because not only it'll allow more time before the formal meeting to introduce resolutions. You know, there's been some complaint that there's a bunch of resolutions introduced at the informal meeting. And then a week later at the formal meeting, there's all these new resolutions and there's less time to talk about them. Well, it would give those who propose resolutions more time to submit them. So there's pluses and, you know, we'll see if there's minuses. I'm open to any idea that makes things more open, more efficient, more public friendly. There's no real downside yet that I see. But, well, you know, it's open.
And
this is an exciting time. You know, there's a lot of really cool things on our agenda. I mean, we might be able to develop a solar farm that would not only save the city money, but actually make the city money. We have a NYPA lighting project that would also allow the city to save a lot of money. And of course the sidewalks. And there's numerous other things we're working on maybe coming up with a more comprehensive parking regulation project. So, you know, there's a lot on the agenda and I hope to get it done within the year.
And so I have one more question about
sure.
These kind of things that you were working on in January before we get to February. Speed limit recommendation. I saw on the social media, one of those social media platforms, the mayor, you know, is saying he doesn't have any opinion on all this, and it's the common council's doing. But was he forced with a gun to send that to Dede Barrett, or did he could he say no? So he took an opinion, right? So he has an opinion. He sent it to Dede Barrett. He did not have to send it to Dede Barrett.
Correct. And then if he didn't send it, we could override his veto. Now, there have been cases where a council overrides a mayoral veto and the mayor still refuses to do something. And that's gone to the courts. That's a very interesting phenomenon. But I think it would be a mayor would be hard-pressed to veto something, have his or her veto overridden, and then still resist sending it on. So, you know, it was a unanimous vote. Oh no, it wasn't. The to change it to 25, I believe, was a unanimous vote. So, you know, what's he going to do? Veto it and then just have us come back and be unanimous again and override his veto? You know, mayors aren't as all powerful as some people think they are.
Right, but he could have if it was an issue that he did feel strongly about, he could have said no and forced your hand to make a public vote, because the council could then also individual members could change their vote under pressure or finding out input from the community members that didn't like it.
Exactly.
So where is that now in the process? Of Barrett has it
it's out of our hands. It's because you have to petition the state to change the speed limit. So it's in Dede Barrett's office. She goes to the state, and we'll see what happens.
And she also is not forced by a gun with a gun to put it through. So she could, in a sense, veto it.
No, correct. It really was the I was going to say brainchild, but it didn't really take a lot of brains. It really was the idea of Dominic Moranti, who's very much concerned with traffic issues.
Yeah, there was a child that died like 2 or 3 years ago, right? By a truck. Didn't a truck hit a child a couple years ago in on Union Street?
I don't think so, but I'll look into it. I don't recall that. But, you know, the other question is, does 5 miles an hour really make a difference? Who knows? It will require more law enforcement. You know, there's all these...
It's lowering it to 25 rather than 30, right?
Correct, yeah.
All right, so now tell us about all that's... What's coming up in February now?
Well, there's a lot of interesting things. Announced yesterday, the Galvin Foundation, which I know has a long and hard to parse history here in Hudson.
Some people love all the charity work they've done. They basically donated the library building, right. But other people think they're sitting on too many buildings and not doing anything with them, or just have too much political power because they have too many buildings in the city.
Right.
Of Hudson.
Exactly, and their political power is in their having invested in a lot of buildings. Now, in their defense, not really their defense, but when you study the history, you have to remember the Galvin Foundation bought a lot of those buildings when no one else was interested in buying buildings from Hudson. So whether that's a good thing or bad thing, it is. It is, you know, it's a fact. They own a lot of buildings, and they're a major presence here in the city. So, you know, just by the virtue of that alone, you have to deal with them in some fashion. Putting that all aside, they've offered the city a really incredible historic building right smack dab in the middle of the city, which would solve a lot of city problems. As you know, we're under a settlement order from the Department of Justice concerning our Americans with Disability compliance. We're not compliant. Our city hall is not compliant. Our code enforcement office is not compliant. Well, Galvin has offered us the old library, which before that was an orphanage, and it's had other lives in its past. It's a beautiful historic building on North 4th Street, and they've offered to give us that building, to contribute $1 million, and to completely get the building ready for renovation. They brought in a construction consultant to estimate how much that renovation would cost, and we would get a completely new renovated historic building, fully ADA compliant. Now, why that's important is because City Hall, as I said, is not ADA compliant. And the one project that, you know, has kind of gotten approval is probably inadequate. It's been publicized as saying, oh, well, we could do this on the cheap. Well, we don't know that's a fact. You can't, just because an architect says, here's one way to make it ADA compliant, does not mean the Department of Justice will accept that version. This is a mistake that's gotten currency throughout the city. Just because a consulting architect said, oh, you can do it on the cheap this way, doesn't mean the Department of Justice would accept that. Secondly, it completely ignores that we have a building, our code enforcement building, which is completely non-compliant, and therefore our code enforcement office, which is one of the most important offices in terms of public need, is not compliant. So this new building would satisfy that completely. We would get rid of those other two buildings, which, of course, help pay for our renovation expenses. And it seems to be a great deal. So we'll see how it plays out. They announced it yesterday. It's a lot happening. And as you know, Galvin also has a housing project on North 7th Street, and that's before the planning board. And I trust the planning board to do the proper due diligence on that. We have a phenomenal planning board. In fact, a lot of the boards in the city right now are top-notch. The Hudson Housing Authority wants to do some housing work, and they're really probably the best the Housing Authority Board has ever been. The one downside in Hudson is we have this one agency, or agency that doesn't know it's an agency, called HDC, the Hudson Development Corps, which wants to sell the CAS building again and seems to think the best way to do that is to do it all in the dark. I'm on that board, and yet, I have no idea what the real estate committee is doing. They don't announce their meetings. They don't tell us any general board anything of what they're doing in terms of who they're approaching or who's approaching them. It's a real mystery to me that no one's really kind of up in arms because of it. Because HDC could easily come up with a buyer and then sort of say, "Well, see the city, we have a buyer, and now you're making trouble." But, you know, HCC has a very troubled history in this city. It's an agency that, in my view, and I make this clear, in my view, probably shouldn't exist. first of all, we have a county development corporation, which at this point is really one of the best agencies around because they brought in an outside professional to run it. That's Mike Tucker. And our own agency has no real leadership. I mean, it has no executive director to speak of. It's the former clerk who used to, you know, take the minutes. It's now, quote, the executive director. And she's a very nice person, but she has zero qualifications in terms of development or planning or any of the subjects that a normal executive director would have. So that's just a little alert to the public about keep your eyes on HDC.
If the city of Hudson is buying property, let's say, is it a secret? You know, if the city of Hudson wanted to buy the hill that's next to the county building or whatever to make a parking lot or whatever, would that be a public process that would be open to the public?
Any real estate transaction would have to be completely open because the last thing you want is any backdoor deal, you know, and favoritism. The Gallon Foundation would like to buy an empty lot on North 7th Street. Actually, they don't want to buy it. They want to make that in exchange for the building at 400 State Street, which is a pretty fair offer because the building at 400 State Street is valued at, you know, a lot of money, whereas the empty lot is very low valued, and they don't even know if you can do anything there. You know, there's been no soil sampling. Can you build there? Can you make a parking lot there? It's not clear.
So I'm just asking because this HDC building process is being done completely in secret. And you're saying that if the city of Hudson was buying property, it would not be done completely in secret. It's only because it's in front of this particular board, and this particular board is arguing that real estate deals need to be done in secret or it'll mess up the real estate deal.
That's what they're saying, correct. And there are things you can keep secret. Well, here's one thing you definitely can't keep secret. If you have a committee, that committee meeting should be announced. Now, whether they go in an executive session or not is another question. But, you know, the last HDC meeting where they started talking about having some offers, it was news to everybody on HDC except those in that limited committee. And that committee, you know, has been meeting. We don't know who they've been meeting with or what they've been meeting. And technically, the only thing that matters is discussion of money because that would affect the transaction. You know, if one bidder, you know, offers one price and then the other bidder hears about it, that would affect the transaction. But you see, because of the way it
affects the transaction in a positive way for the city. When we bought our property in Greene County, we had a tentative deal, but it wasn't all signed. And then somebody came and offered $50,000 more. Luckily, the people we were buying from were buying from direct, and they said we're honoring our deal with you. But they could have taken the more money. If this is public, it only helps the city. I mean, the HDC. It only helps them if it's public because it drives the price up.
Well, that's not how they see it. What can I tell you, Tom? It's, you know, I'm on the board, but they don't really, you know.
So someone would have to file an Article 78 lawsuit because the open meetings law in New York State doesn't have teeth to enforce. Right.
Well, let me tell you something. They have an attorney right now who used to claim that HDC wasn't subject to open meetings laws. That's how crazy things have gotten. I don't know if she still believes that because there's been plenty of rulings that they are definitely subject to open meetings law. So I don't know.
Why wouldn't they be? Like it's a government meeting. We should have access to it as citizens.
I know. Well, you got to ask them, and I hope at the next meeting to get answers to these questions because I've asked the acting executive director this question, and I have not had an answer. I've not had an answer of like who vetted this, what lawyer vetted this whole process, and.